Glass Roses, A Victorian Fairy Tale by Britton Kalai Soderquist. Narrated by Jennifer Wagstaff. 10th of March, 1845. 12 Grantham Square, London. Dear Isabella, I am writing you with a full account of the true story, so you will not be taken in by the gossip that is sure to follow our departure for the continent. Indeed, you may already have heard something of the matter despite my haste. Rest assured that I shall leave nothing out, as I am confident in your ability to conceal the more unpleasant facts while in company. You know from my last letter that I have been harbouring some not inconsiderable worries regarding Fanny's relationship with Lord Walter Clement. How could I not become suspicious of his motives when he has insisted on so much concealment and intrigue? A man with honest intentions does not devote himself to one woman in company and yet spend many private hours with another. And as the Earl is very generally known to be engaged to the Honourable Miss Mercy Allwright, surely his private invitations to Fanny for outings in the park, their sidelong glances and conversations held over the shoulder in the ballroom, and their numerous secret arrangements to meet at the opera must be of an indecent nature. Still, I am convinced that Fanny never once thought about the impropriety of it. After all, you know as well as I that Fanny has no love of opera whatsoever. Nothing but the belief that she really was preferred over Miss Allwright could have induced her to spend so many hours in a place she finds insipid. Naturally, I have tried many times to inform stepmama of these fears. Fanny must be a goose-witted and cruel girl, but even she does not deserve to be taken advantage of by such a rake as Lord Clement. But stepmama would not listen to a word I said. No doubt she was pleased at the thought that one of her girls could secure the affections of so important a man, no matter how underhanded the dealings. She has looked on sedately throughout the whole affair and never once seen the impropriety of their actions, and I have been called jealous and interfering into the bargain. I could not give up, however, with one last attempt at saving Fanny in spite of herself. Shortly after I wrote you last, I also sent a letter to Papa, telling him all that I had observed and expressing my worries that the Earl would soon make off with Fanny in one way or another and ruin her reputation beyond repair. Perhaps my wording was a little strong, but I had only the evening before caught them kissing most passionately in Lady Cartwright's Italian garden during her soiree, and I was rather distressed. If their indiscretion had gone so far as to make Fanny forget herself in such a public place, what had already occurred that I was unaware of? I was surprised that the Earl would forget himself in his locale so completely as well, but it strikes me now that Lady Cartwright and her circle are rather thick with Lord Clement, and I have never felt completely easy in their company since we became acquainted with them. Doubtless he felt they would enter into his view of things should anything untoward be noticed, and would keep his secrets for him. And Fanny had spent a good deal of time in Lady Cartwright's company these last few weeks. Perhaps she has had a hand in forwarding this unfortunate affair. At any rate, my letter was posted Thursday last, and by some miracle reached Papa at breakfast on Friday, a mere hour before he was to take the packet across the Channel to France. He speedily changed his plans and travelled directly to London. He delayed only long enough to send a special express to me, saying I was to keep a close eye on Fanny until he could arrive and handle matters himself. He joined us in Grantham Square early on Saturday, 2 days ago now. I was roused by my maid Martha, who looked very apologetic for taking such a liberty, and was informed that Papa was waiting for me in the front parlour. I dressed hurriedly and went downstairs to join him. One of the servants had supplied him with tea and scones, and he was drinking from his cup with a distracted air. His clothing was rumpled, and he looked wan from his travels. "Papa, I am so glad you have come," I said, approaching him and receiving a hug. "Davies informs me that everyone is at home presently. Is that the case?" he asked. I nodded,